If you lead others, it's common knowledge that drama hampers productivity. Whether it's gossiping at the water cooler, backstabbing, or running to the office to complain, negativity always wastes valuable time and is highly contagious. Today, we are going to talk about what you can do to institute a drama-free workplace and increase productivity. I'd like to introduce Marlene Chisholm. Marlene is the founder of Stop Your Drama and the founder of Attitude Builders, a staff development system that requires no prep, no plan, and no problem. Marlene has a master's degree in development, and she works with leaders who want to run their business with no complaints, no excuses, and no regrets. Here's Marlene.
Thanks, Jocelyn. Hi, yes. Everybody, and welcome to the 7 Ways to Stop Workplace Drama and Increase Productivity. I will never forget when I was 14 years old and I was a car hop at A&W, and when I had any free time, my boss saw me relaxing and he would say, if you've got time to lean, you've got time to clean. So you're free to use that one with your staff if you want to. But I had the idea of productivity drilled into me at an early age. Today, I'm going to lay a foundation about how drama and stress hampers productivity, and then we'll get into the specific 7 steps to increase productivity. At the end, I'm going to share some information about how you can get more of this kind of content to develop your staff and help you stop workplace drama and build better attitudes in your workplace. Now, you have a learning guide, and if not, I want you to just sit back and listen. And I'm just going to give you a warning. Don't try to take furious notes. You will get so behind. This is packed full of content-rich information. You will get a chance to listen to this again, or if you want to purchase the whole transcript, that's going to be available after this is over. And as Jocelyn mentioned, I will give a break a couple of times to clarify or to answer any questions just in case you miss something. So let's talk about the number one productivity problem. The number one productivity problem is negativity, and I call it drama in the workplace. We all have drama, and I want to define drama. My global definition is any obstacle to peace and prosperity. Again, that's any obstacle to peace and prosperity. So if anything is going on that keeps you from peace, that is going to hamper your health and ultimately your productivity. As we get further into this program, I'll expand or tweak the definition for drama in the workplace. So this piece right now is on your handout, and you can follow along with me. Recently, I did a survey, and I asked participants a question. I said, what would improve productivity in your workplace? And I got 4 main answers. Number 1, less gossiping. Number 2, better attitudes. Number 3, work needs to be more fun. And number 4, leave personal baggage at home. The next question was, what resources do you need to improve things in your workplace? And I got 4 answers. Number 1, communication skills. Number 2, leadership training for myself. Number 3, staff development. And number 4, training, just general training. So I asked the question, what keeps you from implementing training? And I got 2 answers, and it's the answers we give for everything in life, not enough time and not enough money. Well, that is always going to be the answer, I believe, and I think that it's time to say, perhaps this will never change. So we basically have 2 choices. Choice number 1 is to accept what is. It just is what it is. Choice number 2 is to devote the time and the resources to plug the leak. Now, obviously, you're on this call or you might be listening at a later time, so congratulations for choosing number 2. So now that we've kind of taken that drama of time and money off the table, what now? Well, let's talk about the definitions of drama as it involves workplace. I define it as ineffective relationships that include unresolved conflict between supervisor and employee or unresolved conflict between employee peers that hampers, stops, or prohibits productivity. Now I'm going to give you some indicators. So the indicators that you have drama is a lack of teamwork, gossip, backstabbing, power struggles. That's just some general guides. If you have any of these issues, and I can guarantee that if you do, these issues will be the obstacle to your peace and prosperity, especially as a leader. Productivity for the purpose of today's program is defined as any activity, behavior, policy, or practice which positively contributes to the financial goals, the organizational goals, or the mission of the company. So if anything is going on in your clinic, your practice, your organization, your association that is not connected to your financial, organizational, or the missions or goals of your company, it's most likely drama. So let's talk about the number one problem, negativity. Employees complaining about other employees, gossip, focusing on the past, and petty grievances. That is negativity. Now, there was an issue in HR Magazine that was, it was an article that was called The Brain at Work. And there was this sidebar where there was a statement about negativity. And I think you'll be really interested in this. It said, if you give negative things attention, the negativity in your life grows. It's like that mantra, what you focus on expands. This is not just New Age junk, though. This is based on neuroscience. Cognitive scientists now know, I think this is so interesting, that the brain changes as a function of where an individual puts his or her attention. So the brain changes as a function of where we put our attention. Now, there's bad news and good news about this. The bad news is when you vent, complain, or gripe, you grow new brain cells that strengthen those urges. But here's the good news. You can learn how to focus your attention on positive behavior and grow those connections as well. So it's very important to identify, and this is really just for your awareness, so that you'll start noticing when there's a tendency to gripe and complain. Just understand that you're increasing that tendency whenever you allow it. So let's look at the facts. This is also on your learning guide, and it's numbered 1 to 5. So what I'm going to do is give you the 5 facts of negativity. Then I'm going to take each one, and I'm going to expand on each one. So number 1, negativity is normal, or perhaps we should say common. Number 2, negativity is not healthy. Number 3, negativity hampers productivity. Number 4, there are 3 kinds of negativity. And number 5, rudeness is becoming a big problem in the workplace. And I think if you've been watching the news at all, you'll see that it's becoming a big problem in our world. So now let me expand on each point. The first point, the first fact, negativity is common. As human beings, we think over 60,000 thoughts per day, and 85% of those thoughts are negative. Negativity is a habit for most people. So although it's common or it's normal or it's natural, this is an area where you want to train your brain and develop your staff to train their brains to be abnormal or uncommon. And we can do that, and I'll tell you more about that later. Fact number 2, negativity is not healthy. I am a voracious reader, and one of my favorite books is called The Power of Full Engagement. It was written by Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz. And these two authors say that emotions that arise out of threat, deficit, anger, frustration, or fear have a toxic feel, and they are related to the stress hormones such as cortisol. Then here's another piece of information from the American Journal of Cardiology. They report that positive emotions increase chances for a healthy heart. Feelings of appreciation can create smooth, healthy cardiovascular rhythms and a healthier nervous system. And then finally, here's something that I use in almost all of my speeches when I travel about the country. And this one is that a 5-minute episode of recalling an angry experience can suppress the immune system for up to 6 hours. And this is from the Journal of the Advancement of Medicine. So it's not just me saying this. There's been research to support that negativity is harmful. Let's look at fact number 3. Negativity hampers productivity. Employees taking time to register a complaint wastes time. Absenteeism slows down production, and turnover is expensive. So right there you can see some of the effects of negativity. Now, in my Stop Your Drama signature process, I've developed a system that I call the 8 Steps of Empowerment. In fact, I just got back from a conference where I was sharing some of that information, and it's my favorite thing to talk about. So I want to talk about the 2 first steps just very briefly so you'll get a taste of it. Every time I see drama and a lot of time wasting, I know that it's related to 2 things, It is related to, number one, a lack of clarity, and number two, it is often related to a systems or a measurement problem, which I call identify the gap. So in my Stop Your Drama methodology, the first steps are clear the fog and identify the gap. So I will always see those two components in drama. For example, I would like to share this with the leaders on the call. When the vision is clear, everyone rows in the same direction. When we're in the fog, we get confused, and that's where the power struggles come in. Now, I'm known for this saying, the one with the clarity navigates the ship, and everyone else shovels coal. So if you're a leader and you feel like you are shoveling coal in the boiler room to keep the ship going, it means you're in the midst of drama. And the people who are negative are the ones who are more clear about their commitment to drama than the ones who want peace and prosperity and the ones who are supposed to be leading the ship. So you have to get completely clear about who you are as a leader, what your organization is all about, and how that plays into the mission of the organization. Secondly, as I said, the problem can be a systems or measurement problem, and I call this the gap. So the gap is where you set goals and strategies to help you fulfill the mission. The gap is the difference between where you are now and where you say you want to be. So the visual that I give is this. Think of it as you in a rowboat, and your island is either 50 miles away, 500 miles away, or 5,000 miles away. So if your island is called 20% increase in productivity and 10% decrease in turnover, you now know what you want, but you have to know where you're starting. So you have to track your numbers of complaints or absenteeism or turnover so that you'll know if your training methods and your strategies are working and if you're getting a return on your investment. So that's the two problems that I see always, and there's more than that usually in every drama, but I always see one of those two problems at least. Okay, let's look at fact number four. There's three kinds of negativity. So I have three kinds here, which is general, boss-employee, and employee-peer. Let me expand on that just a bit. General negativity has to do with the overall climate of low morale, which can be due to many factors, some that I just explained, or even putting the wrong person on the wrong job. Okay? So then there's the boss-employee drama. That is the problems between the boss and employee. Now, the number one reason for turnover, and you probably already know this, is because of the relationship, a relationship problem with the boss. Now, don't misunderstand me. This isn't to say that it's the fault of the boss, because here's what I found when I've done research, when I've done consulting. The boss may be a very nice person, but be perceived as unfair, perhaps because there's no systems in place, and therefore it drives the staff crazy and they get into power struggles. So there's many reasons for boss-employee drama, but nonetheless, boss-employee drama, as you can imagine, really hampers productivity and wastes a lot of time. Then there's the employee-peer drama, and this is the drama or the conflict between employee and employee. Now, research supports that one catalyst for high productivity is to have at least one good friend at work. So if you feel connected in your workplace and it becomes enjoyable, the reality is that it impacts your attitude and your motivation to give just a little bit more, and work becomes very rewarding. So you actually want people to like each other and to get along. Now let's look at fact number five, that rudeness is becoming a big problem. There was a study that was done by Northwestern National Life, and they estimate that one in four workers has been victimized by some form of threat, harassment, or physical attack. Now, here's the red flags. Absenteeism, stress-related illness, and then the big scary one for all of us, lawsuits. This is going to really shake you up and make you want to see the importance of eliminating drama in your workplace. I read somewhere that every lawsuit starts out as a complaint that was not addressed. So when I say run your office with no complaints, no excuses, and no regrets, I don't mean let people complain and you don't tap in. I mean that you have to be aware so that you can handle it, and there's ways to do that, and we will get to that on the seven steps. Now, I've covered this part about negativity, so I want to check in with Jocelyn briefly. If you're wanting me to clarify something, you have a comment or a question, you can type that in right now. So I'm going to open to her very briefly to see if anyone has done that, and then we'll open the phone lines very quickly, and we'll move right along.
Yeah, we do have a couple of questions, Marlene.
Okay.
First question, How do you handle a situation when you're part of a team and a team member gets angry and takes it personally when you're trying to address issues that pertain to the job?
Wow. Say that one more time. I want everybody to really get the gist of that.
How do you handle a situation when you are part of a team and a team member gets angry and takes it personally when you are trying to address issues that pertain to the job?
You know, that's a multifaceted question, and since I don't know the complete situation, I'm going to give a general answer. But I'm going to say that sometimes when something is sensitive, it's up to us as leaders to make sure that we handle it in such a way that it's not a surprise to someone. So I don't know if that was a surprise, but part of that comes in the way that you coach your people and help them, and a part of it comes in the way that you acknowledge an idea. So unless I knew the full situation, and if that person wants to type that in later, if they want to get on the phone, we might be able to address that. But I can imagine all kinds of scenarios with this, so I don't feel like I can give a full answer. But I want to say that you have to be aware. And a lot of times when I'm coaching or consulting, there's situations like this, and because you're the leader, you don't see where it could cause trouble. For example, there was a person I was working with, and her team was not doing the work to the standards, and the productivity was a little bit behind on the time limits that they had. So she was going to bring in a former leader that had been with the company, and my suggestion was, instead of doing that without them knowing, to actually have a meeting that it was going to happen and ask for their input about what they wanted to learn. That way they became a part of the solution versus a big surprise that was like, you're not doing your job, and here, therefore, I'm getting someone that's better than you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, and if that person wants to write anything more detailed, feel free. But
yes.
Thank you, Marlene. Another quick question. What was you mentioned a book, The Power of Something, and someone didn't catch that last part. If you
can
repeat that.
It's called The Power of Full Engagement.
Okay.
Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz. It's a great business book. It's going to make you change your mind so much about productivity and how you use your energy, and I will be talking a little bit about that on this call.
Okay, and we have another question that just came in as well.
Okay.
How do you balance, quote, correcting people without them feeling like you are attacking them? Without pointing out errors, no correction can occur. This person says they know it has to be done in a positive and non-attacking, non-threatening way, which she always tries to do, but sometimes I feel like employees think I'm picking on them, she says.
Okay, so here's one thing that, and I may even be discussing this a little bit later, but I want to give you one really usable tip. Here's something that I do with people that I work with. When I first get started with them, we create a way to talk about things as a code. I'll say, here's how I want us to work together. I think I have the job defined, and I think that I know what I want you to do, and you think that you know. Let's get together, and let's meet after this project is completed. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, on a scale of 1 to 10, for me, this was an 8. And here's the two things that I think could have happened that would have made it a 10, and now we have a way to correct. Then I ask them for feedback as far as my directions and setting expectations as a leader. Where was I on that scale of 1 to 10? Then it becomes about teamwork and us working together so that we know each other's expectations. So that's just one practical solution you can use, is the 1 to 10 scale. But once again, you're letting them know up front that before they start a task or a project, there will be feedback. And here's how that feedback will look. And here's the response I want you to have. So you're letting them know how you want them to receive feedback, and that it's only for the productivity of the team. It's not a personal attack. So this comes with development and training, which we'll talk a little bit about later.
Okay.
Okay. Good deal.
Great. We have one more question.
Okay.
This person says, at our monthly staff meetings, I always end with, does anyone have any comments or complaints? 99% of the time, there was no one who will say anything. Yet once the meeting is over, I hear little discussions between staff members that could have been addressed at the meeting with everyone available to offer input. How do I fix this?
Oh, that is an awesome, awesome, awesome question. So I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to be addressing this on a part one of the 7 steps. And so you remind me, Jocelyn, if I don't.
Sure.
Because
okay.
This will be on the very first step of how to handle that kind of thing. And so I will talk about that. It's a great question. Everybody's afraid of being the one that says something at a meeting, and so it's kind of like we stay with the status quo and then we gripe later. When you work together on this program that I'm going to show you, you'll be able to filter that in before the end of the meeting, and it'll be a better deal. Okay?
Okay. Great. Okay. So that's everything. There's actually one more that just came in.
Okay, I'm going to be the last one, and then we'll go on, and then we'll break again if there's more. Okay.
Sure. And this is a follow-up from the person who had the question about the team member who gets angry and takes it personally.
Okay.
this person is part of a three-member team who takes care of a mentally challenged client. She's tried to let the person know that she's not judging her. She's only concerned about addressing some of the issues that affect the client.
Okay.
I don't know if you have any more input on that, but she was just clarifying.
Well, here's my suggestion is that I would actually ask for a meeting and to say, my perception is that there's something bothering you, and I don't know what it is, but I want to be a support to you. It seemed to me like you got angry when I said X. What was going on for you?
Okay.
It's an authentic conversation where we don't ignore it, and we don't make them wrong. We want to know. And then we find out what it is, and then from that place we can move forward. So some of it is about developing your staff, because we can only be as good as – this is just something that I think people need to know. 95% of how we operate is programmed from our subconscious mind. Until we develop ourselves and further develop our way of thinking, old patterns just keep coming up. And the reality is you can't really change behavior until the thinking changes. I know there's a lot of philosophy out there about it's all about behavior, and I really don't care how you feel. But the reality is we're all governed by our programming. So part of this has to do with development, and part of it has to do with a real authentic conversation to find out what's at the root of the problem.
Okay, great.
Okay, so I'm going to move on and keep writing those questions, and if we need to, we'll have a day of questions. So let's go on. I want to talk now about stress because the two are so related. Then I'm going to give you the solutions you can implement, okay? So now we're going to go right into stress and how it relates to negativity. So what is stress? It is the feeling of excitement, anxiety, or physical tension that occurs when demands placed on the individuals are beyond his ability to cope. Now, there's another definition that I love, and it's this. Stress is the consequence of resistance. Any of you that know me, I do a lot of work on releasing resistance because that's about energy. It's about intention. This quote comes from one of my favorite authors, Gary Zukav. He says, whatever we resist and dread becomes stress, and stress always leads to negativity. So I'm going to say that quote one more time. Stress is the consequence of resistance. That may be unfamiliar to you. That's okay. Let it soak. It will start to make sense. Let's look at the facts about stress. Now, on your learning guide, you have four facts, and again, for your convenience, I'm going to list them first, then I'll expand on each one. So that should help you to follow along. So on your learning guide, here are the four facts. Number one, stress is both healthy and unhealthy. Number two, relationships are a source of stress or a source of support. Number three, lack of rejuvenation contributes to stress. Number four, the body needs regular rest and recovery. Now let me expand on each point. Number one, stress is healthy and unhealthy. Now, we all know about good stress. It's the kind where you feel challenged and you feel exhilarated. You need to reach a deadline, and it's a bit scary, but you know what? You feel motivated. This is the opposite of bad stress, where you're completely taxed and worried, overworked, and overwhelmed. So there's two kinds. And the bad stress causes certain hormonal changes in your body, which rapidly alters the function of the cells in your vital organs. Not surprisingly, these effects are related or reflected even in your physical appearance. So I want you to become aware of when you start seeing someone's skin looking a little bit sallow, a little bit broken out, you start to notice it's related to stress. The skin is the largest organ of your body, and when you have a lot of stress, it shows up in your skin. 1/4 of all the drugs prescribed in the United States goes to the treatment of stress. I think that is fascinating. Here's another statistic. Headaches cost $50 billion annually in medical expenses and absenteeism. That's how stressed we all are, and that's the impact on our economy, on our skin, on the world around us. Here's fact number two. Relationships are either a source of support or a source of stress. We all know this. Arguing with family, friends, or colleagues creates stress. Here's the reality. You are a whole person, and you bring this baggage to work with you. Even if you have a high measure of self-control, it's still there in the background of your mind, and it is affecting your body and shooting cortisol into your system. You feel exhausted, and this impacts your personal effectiveness. The same is true for workplace relationships. The number one source of stress for employees The number one source of stress for employees is a rude boss who uses intimidation tactics to manage. When you dread coming to work, you are not going to be productive. That is the bottom line. When you dread it, you will not be productive. Now, I work with and do a lot of coaching with very high-driven, high-performance, low-tolerance individuals who own their own company, and I sometimes have a hard time convincing them that their aggressive behavior is actually wasting more time than saving time. Sometimes, just slowing down to answer a question and having a little bit of compassion will shave hours off of a project that otherwise could be full of drama. And I know you've probably experienced that, especially if you're a leader in middle management where there's someone above you that's really aggressive and you feel like that in-between person. I know that you've probably said to yourself, if the main boss would just calm down and answer a question, we wouldn't have all the drama, and that is so true. So here's the deal. When a boss or a leader sees the performance impact, that's when he or she is willing to change. In other words, whenever they see how this behavior impacts the bottom line, that's when things start to change. And until they do, they will justify it. It's so easy to get caught up in the blame or justification. If everybody would just do what I say, it would be okay, or I have the right to be angry. But the reality is that justification does not change it. Another reality is all of us can make little shifts that challenge us and improve our productivity for the overall good. Once again, relationships can enhance performance. Gallup found that a key factor in sustained performance is having one good friend at work. Now, I got this quote and this statistic right out of The Powerful Engagement, the book I just recommended. Gallup found that a key factor in sustained performance is having one good friend at work. Fact number three, lack of rejuvenation contributes to stress. I'm just going to pause on that for a second because we're all working way too hard without any breaks. Lack of rejuvenation contributes to stress. Not getting enough sleep, worrying, working too hard, or even playing too hard can all create stress. Weekend warriors who try to make up for a week of inactivity by spending hours engaged in strenuous physical sports raise their stress levels to an unhealthy degree. Any activity that is practiced without moderation can lead to a stress response. So we need rest and recovery. Number four, fact number four, that's it. The body needs regular rest and recovery. We can only push so hard for so long without breaking down and burning out. And again, these stress hormones circulating in the body, they feel energizing at first, but over time, there's some red flags. Over time, this is what you're going to notice. And I've noticed this within myself, and I bet many on this call have noticed it. Over time, it prompts hyperactivity, aggressiveness, impatience, self-absorption, and insensitivity to others. When I first started traveling with my speaking, I would notice that sometimes I would kind of hit this wall and I would start getting kind of edgy. And even if I was sitting down at a conference luncheon, and let's say the waiter or waitress kind of bumped me or spilled a little water on me or something like that, I felt like just screaming. I felt like chastising them. That's when I knew that I was tired and I probably needed to drink water. I started realizing that I started becoming aggressive, I was not compassionate, and that was a signal to me that I wasn't taking care of my body. So if you feel like that, you need to understand that we get very addicted to activity, and it's time to understand the distinction between results and being busy. I really believe technology has contributed to our inability to slow down and focus, and we are so unaware of how we are becoming very self-absorbed and undisciplined. The point is, you need to create a discipline to slow down and recover and take note of how you feel and how your productivity levels are impacted, as well as the impact on your relationships. So why is there so much stress? Now, this is filled in on your learning guide, but I'm going to read it anyway. Number one, people are expected to respond in shorter time spans. Number two, people are now doing more with less. We can all agree about that. Number three, resources are down. And number four, there's a weakening of social and family structures. Now, also on your learning guide, there's this piece that says the hidden payoffs of being stressed. So there's four hidden payoffs, and I want to read those. Being stressed makes you feel important and busy. It gives us an excuse. Well, I'm busy. Well, I'm stressed. Number two, it's a convenient excuse for maintaining personal distance. Well, after all, I just can't get together with friends tonight because I'm so stressed and I'm so busy. It's an excuse. Number three, you can avoid personal growth by blaming it on stress. And number four, you can excuse rude behavior by saying, I was stressed. So we need to get to the core of the truth. And that's part three of my Stop Your Drama methodology, is tell yourself the truth, by the way. The real reason you were stressed is because you didn't know how to master yourself, you didn't know how to make choices, you didn't know how to set boundaries. That's just very difficult for all of us to notice, but instead we get into the victim mindset and we say, well, I was stressed, it was outside circumstances, I was so busy, it was because of, you know, my staff, my boss, my whatever. There's a kernel of truth in all of that, but the reality is we don't know how to master ourselves, and that's why we get so stressed. Now, I did this seminar a while back, and this was apparently the most important part for so many people, so I want to take a little time with it. I have something that was kind of done tongue-in-cheek, and it's ways to avoid the responsibility of mastering your energy. And when I do my Stop Your Drama methodology, my 8 steps of empowerment, step number 6 is about mastering your energy. And I came up with these 5 ways to avoid responsibility, and they are: never exercise, number 2, eat junk food, number 3, become a workaholic, number 4, procrastinate, and number 5, never ask for help. So what that really means is, if you want to master your energy, you're going to exercise, you're going to eat right, you're going to take breaks, you're going to get things done, and you're going to ask for help. So I bet everybody on the call today can find one or two of these areas. And for me, it's never asking for help and becoming a workaholic. Those are two things that I'm challenged with sometimes. So we can all find one or two, if not all 5, and we can improve and master our energy at a much higher level. So I want to skip ahead to the common myths that contribute to stress. And there's 3 common myths. Number 1 is, I don't have time. Number 2, I have to multitask to get things done. And number 3, skipping lunch and breaks is going to help me catch up. Now I want to bust those myths. And then right after that, we will go into the 7 steps to improve your productivity. So myth number 1, I don't have time. In Stephen Covey's book, The 8th Habit, he quotes one of the greatest management thinkers of our time, Peter Drucker, to say, Peter Drucker said this, for the first time, literally substantial and rapidly growing numbers of people have choices. For the first time, they have choices. People now have to manage themselves, and society is totally unprepared for it. It's just what I said earlier. We don't know how to master ourselves. We don't know how to make choices. We don't know how to set boundaries. The point is this. The illusion is that there's no time. The reality is we simply have weak muscles when it comes to knowing how to choose. We are all falling for a belief that we can do it all and have it all and do more with less, and we do so, and we believe this at the expense of our health and our mental sanity. We are not telling ourselves the truth. So this is all about understanding that energy is one of our most valuable resources. Let's look at the second myth. I have to multitask to get it done. When we multitask, we divide our attention instead of focusing on the task at hand. This is creating an attention deficit disorder because we've lost the skill of focus. When people try to perform 2 or more related tasks, either at the same time or alternately rapidly going between the 2 tasks, errors go way up and it takes far longer, often double the time or more, to get the job done than if they were done sequentially. The bottom line is you can't simultaneously be thinking about your tax return and reading an essay, just as you can't talk to yourself about 2 things at once. This was a quote from David Meyer, who's the director of the Brain Cognition and Action Laboratory at the University of Michigan. So if you end up getting the transcript, you're going to get that, and you're going to get all the resources. So I'm just asking people not to ask me for that kind of information on the phone because it's so content-packed. It's from David Meyer, Director of Brain Cognition and Action Laboratory at University of Michigan. That was his quote. This is interesting, too. Cell phone use is one of the leading causes of distracted driver accidents in California. In a recent study, and this was from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, drivers using cell phones are 4 times as likely to get into a serious auto accident. And a serious auto accident, for our purposes, was defined as one that required the person in the accident to be sent to the hospital. So you're four times more likely to get into an auto accident when you're using the cell phone. That just shows you the impact of multitasking on our personal effectiveness. We think we're getting more done, but we're actually doing pretty sloppy work is the nutshell here. Skipping lunch and breaks. A lot of people believe this is the third myth, that if I skip lunch and breaks, I'll get ahead. Now, this is from Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz once again, Powerful Engagement. I love this. It's helped me tremendously. It's helped my clients when they've understood this. Somewhere between 90 minutes and 120 minutes, the body begins to crave rest and recovery. The signals include yawning, stretching, hunger, procrastination, and mistakes. So that is very important to know, that you need rejuvenation between 90 and 120 minutes. There's some sort of rest and rejuvenation that's needed. So I want to open up real quick to see if there's any more questions, and then we'll go right into the seven steps. Are you there, Jocelyn?
I'm sorry, Marlene. There are no additional questions via web. Would you like me to open it up on the phone?
Let's open up on the phone just to see, and then we'll go right into the seven steps. We'll open probably one more time, and then we'll close.
Okay. I'm going to unmute everyone, and if you would like to mute your own phone, you can hit *6, and that will mute yourself if you don't have a mute button on your phone. So I will unmute for a moment here and see if anyone has any live questions. Just a moment. All right, everyone is unmuted, so if you want to chime in with any questions, feel free.
Yes, is anyone on the phone lines that would like to ask a quick question? Okay. Mm-hmm. What? Okay, go ahead. Hello?
Not hearing anything come in clearly enough, unfortunately. So, yeah, if you type questions to us, we'll get those readily out to Marlene here, but I'm not able to hear whatever's coming in via phone at the moment.
That's okay. Maybe someone's on a cell phone trying to ask, and if that's the case, you can always email me after this, and I'll see if I can answer it by email, and that would be info@stopyourdrama.com. Okay?
Great. Thank you.
We will go right into what you signed up for now that the foundation has been laid, and this will make sense and make you understand why I took the time to talk about drama, stress, and negativity. So now we're into the seven steps to stop workplace drama and increase productivity. The first step is to have a regular staff meeting. I suggest you have a regular staff meeting every single week. Now, I can almost hear the collective groans and the excuses of I don't have time, or they turn into complaint sessions. Okay, so let me give you the information about how to do this. A, they need to be consistent. And Jocelyn, is that muted again? Is everyone muted? There, that's better. Okay. Regular staff meetings. They need to be consistent. Number two, they need to have a template agenda. You need to have a templated agenda. I'll talk more about this in a minute. You need to promote engagement and recognition at every single meeting. And there needs to be a section of motivation and fun. If not every time, at least one out of four times. You need to have a section of motivation, development, fun. Okay, so here's an example. Every Friday from 11 to noon, or every first and third Wednesday, we have a meeting. And those meetings can be an hour or less. Sometimes they can be 20 minutes, but you need to do this regularly, and there's reasons. Okay, now let's talk about the templated agenda, because most people have not been trained in this, and when they have a meeting, they get together, they lose control, or no one says anything, and it's a waste of time. Meetings should not be a waste of time. There's times to have a meeting, and there's times when you don't. But here's what I suggest putting on your agenda. And I have four different pieces, and you can add to this as you see fit. The first section, and, okay, this is where the first question was asked to me, and I said I would get back to it. Here it is. The person said, I always ask them if they have any questions or comments or complaints, and they never say it until after the meeting. What if you had an agenda that every single time they were required to come to you with what's working and what's not working? And there's no judgment here. It's simply we take 5 minutes, they come to you, and we list it on either a flip chart, on one side what's working, on the other side what's not working. You could even get them to do that ahead of time if you didn't want to waste the time, but at least you have a list now, and you can address that. Here's what's working, here's what's not working. You want to explain that the rules are there's no blaming or finger pointing. It's simply looking at the facts. The second piece on your agenda might be new projects, new prospects, new clients, just information that has to do with the revenue of the company. What's going on? What are we spending? What are we bringing in? Something to that effect. The third piece could be recognition, what someone has done in an outstanding way. You could even have your team members nominate someone on their team once a month and put it in a jar. There's lots of ways to get creative. So there needs to be some sort of recognition. Then finally, there needs to be some sense of facilitation and engagement where everybody participates on some level. Now, years ago, I developed this product, and it was called Monthly Motivators. And basically, it was a monthly article with themes around customer service, integrity, teamwork, and other values-based and character-based principles. And the idea was that if managers could use these articles as facilitation and engagement, it would change the thinking of the staff. Now, many of my clients purchase these and they use the content as a mini training program, but others use them as a filler for their bigger meetings that centered around more dry topics such as safety or compliance. Nonetheless, it was a real easy way to create engagement. Now, you don't have to buy this product and you can do it with other articles. The point is that that these articles were just built to be concise, appropriate, and thought-provoking, very short, one page, and it was just a resource to busy leaders who were committed to development. Now, later, I'm going to show you how you can get these articles as a free bonus with another product that I'm offering during this productivity launch. But for now, know that even if you're not interested in that, you can still do something like this where you clip an article, you clip something, and you facilitate the training. So if you have time to do that, you can do that on your own without purchasing anything. The cool thing, though, about these workplace articles is that later you can teach your team members to be the facilitators, and since you have a year's worth, you have your planning right there, plus you increase their engagement, and eventually the team becomes responsible for that part of the presentation. So it really becomes fun, and it really creates a camaraderie. Now, let me tell you about some of the biggest meeting mistakes, because if in your mind you're arguing with some of the things that I'm saying, it's probably because you're making one of these mistakes. So let me give you that checklist. A mistake is to make the meeting all about who did what wrong. I'm going to tell you that I would dread to go to that kind of meeting if I thought I was going to be called on the carpet in front of everybody. It's never about who did what wrong. It's about what's working, what's not working. Another mistake is lecturing the whole time. It's boring. They're just not going to engage if that's what you do. When you make it about them and whenever they start contributing, they start engaging and they start buying into your ideas. The next one is not listening to their ideas. You've got to listen to their ideas so that it becomes partly their idea and they engage. Here's another one, telling them they have a voice when the decision has already been made. Today's employees and staff are smarter than that. Let's not lie to them. If we already know what the answer is, we're not manipulating. We're really asking for ideas, and sometimes we have to say the idea was valid, here's why we didn't use it. That makes them understand that it's still a good contribution, okay? And that is the next one, not recognizing contributions, and then not telling a reason behind a decision. If you say, give me your feedback, and they all come up with ideas, and to them these ideas seem very logical, and then you go about business as usual, and you don't tell them why the decision was made the way it was, they start grumbling and gossiping. That's why the weekly meeting can be the space for you to say, I want to acknowledge the great decisions that came out. After we went into some research, we found that we weren't able to use these right now, and here's why. We didn't have the resources. We didn't have the time. We were worried about the changes. It doesn't mean we're not going to use them, but we so want to thank you for contributing because it opened up some new ideas. Something like that. So your first step is to hold weekly meetings with an agenda and use the same agenda, basically, over and over so you get very consistent and you stay in control. It should also be really fun and something that they look forward to. It should never turn into a gripe session, a blame session, or a free-for-all. Okay? So that's step number one. Step number two is to institute a drama-free workplace. And with this step, I have six sub-steps, and here's how you do this. You can't just say this is a drama-free workplace and not have a method. Okay? So here's the six things I recommend. Number one is solicit their ideas about improvement. People, they will support what they help to create. So solicit their ideas all the time. You can do that in the weekly meeting. Number two, which is on the first one too, brainstorm about what's working and not working. Number three, teach them the difference between complaining and problem solving. There's a big difference when someone comes to you with a complaint and they want you to rescue and to save it versus they come to you with a complaint, but they say, I have a couple of ideas. This is what I would suggest. That's a different way of operating. They become partners that way. Number four, this is huge. Quit trying to be their best friend and their secret confidant and be fair instead. I have a lot of research on that. It's very easy to start doing things to make them like us, and it's better for them to see you as fair than for them to really like you. You want them to be polite and have fond feelings, but it's not about you being a best friend, so you have to draw the line there. Number five is build a standard operating procedure manual and let them be part of it. Build it so that it works. Have them tweak it whenever someone is doing a task and there's an operating procedure. Have that person look at that task on an ongoing basis and tweak it so that you have a written record of how things are done, so that if they ever quit or they ever get fired, that it works, that you can just slide someone into that position. The next piece is very much related, and that is to develop an employee manual and go over the rules at least once a year. You want to test for their understanding, and you want to keep it fair. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Okay, so that is those two places. I want to quickly check in with Jocelyn to see if anyone has written any questions.
Yes, we do have a couple this time,
okay.
Actually. First question, how do you redirect a negative employee? Every time she calls me, I cringe before answering her call, this person says.
That's a great question. It's a great one. And my short answer is, first of all, they're not aware and it's a pattern. And second of all, you have to bring it to their attention. And the third piece is you have to develop them in order to do that, because it's an ingrained pattern from their subconscious. They're coming to you complaining. You're dreading it. And probably to keep the peace, you're just kind of soft-soaping or being nice. You have to be willing to upset them, and that's the hard answer. You've got to be willing for them to be upset. Okay.
Okay, great. And our second question, how do you have the staff meeting if you also have part-time employees? Do you require them to be present also?
I think you should in your perfect world, because what I've noticed about those kind of situations is, maybe you can divide it up sometimes to where it only applies to full-time staff. There could be those instances. So if everything you're saying does apply to both sides, you either need to have two meetings or you need to have all of it at once, because what happens is they start feeling like outsiders. So you want them to feel engaged. You want to use their brain power, so definitely you want them to feel included. And if you have to separate it out, let them know in advance why you're doing that. And then if they can come up with ideas of how it might work, you might be really surprised. They might be willing, a couple of them, to come in early. They might be willing to do things if it becomes their idea.
Okay, great.
Okay.
And actually, we just got one more in here. This person says, one of my employees is very threatened by anyone else that she feels may know more than her. I've tried to explain to her that she has knowledge to share with coworkers, just as they would have some knowledge to share with her. She tries to tell them to learn from each other. However, the problem still exists. What does she do?
Yeah, that's very, very tough. So here would be my suggestion with this one right now. In your weekly meetings, start having a place where you encourage those that share knowledge. Because once you start doing that, you create a different culture. Like right now, there's some fear that if she shares knowledge, she's not going to get credit.
Mm-hmm.
So what needs to happen is when people share knowledge, they need to get credit for that. They need to be seen as the one that's really playing as a team member. So from your leadership, you can encourage, like when someone shares knowledge with you, you can brag on them at the meeting, and that just becomes part of the agenda. And
mm-hmm.
then someone else that got knowledge from someone else can say, I just want to thank Sally for showing me a better way to do this procedure, because that saved me time and it's saving us a lot of money because of that. So when your staff starts tapping into how this saves money or how this saves time, and you teach them to think like that and they get rewarded for it, find a way to reward it, whether through a compliment, through the employee of the month, find some way to where it feels secure to do that.
Okay, great.
Okay.
And that's all we have on web right now.
All right, then we will go back, and we are at step three. This one always brings up some drama, so I can't wait to share this with you, and that is to adjust the open door policy. I used to say no more open door policies, and people took it the wrong way. Here's what I mean. The door should not always be open. If you take nothing more than this one step, it's going to multiply your own productivity tenfold. Make the policy, when people come to you, by appointment only or between designated hours. have a simple method that allows you to capture the facts and get solutions. So in other words, on Wednesdays between 2 and 4, that's when you can come to me, but I want you to set it up as an appointment. And I want you to come with some ideas. The ideas may not be usable, but I still want you to come. I want you to problem solve and use your brain. What could we do to make this work versus who's wrong? Because there's a difference in who did something wrong versus here's a possible solution. So you start training them to think like that, or you can say the only day the door is open is on. So there's different ways you can do that, and later on I'll take some questions on that because that one always raises a whole lot of eyebrows. But what happens is if you think that you're helping by always having an open door for them to come and tattle and complain and to gripe, what you're really doing is enabling them to be victims instead of problem solvers. So when they start to understand that it's important whenever they come to you that you truly are open and you definitely want communication, but it can't be a free-for-all because obviously you have work to do too. And if it's, you know, if it's an emergency, that's one thing. But if it's just something that they need to gripe about, that could either wait for the meeting. So there's two chances. There's the meeting or there's the open door, which is between a certain hours or on a certain day. Okay? So let's go to number four. Number four is to stop office gossip. In other words, do not be a keeper of secrets. Now, here's a scenario I'm going to share with you because it happens all the time. Here's an example of what's not acceptable. Let's say Sally comes to you and says, don't tell Donna I'm telling you this, but Donna is unhappy with the schedule. So the natural response is to befriend Sally and believe she's giving you inside information about Donna. In reality, this is a red flag because unless the situation is life-threatening or extremely serious to the health of your organization, this turns into someone representing someone else. Never a good thing. Always creates drama. Do not empower others to represent someone else. In other words, tattling or butting in. And run to you with rumors, hearsay, projections, or assumptions. Do not allow that. Here is your response. Okay, here's the solution. Your question is, now I'm curious, why did you come to me with that problem rather than encouraging Donna to come to me? Then you can suggest that we get Donna in the meeting too, or you can say it very calmly without any anger or drama. You know, you can just say, you know what, I know that you're probably trying to help, but I want people to have the courage to come to me, and so unless I hear that from Donna, I'm going to let this stay open because she needs to come to me. This is not your place unless it was something very urgent. The employees are going to get the message that you're not going to take sides or be the keeper of secrets. This takes some willpower, but in my Stop Your Drama methodology, or the 8 Steps of Empowerment, I regularly talk about a concept called the Cartman Drama Triangle, where you can learn to identify these drama patterns instead of being in the middle and rescuing. Now, I'm going to be doing that program in March, because March is Stop Your Drama Month. I have a lot of activities planned for March, and that's a long ways away, but if you're wanting to learn more about this, that's going to happen in the future. The fifth one is to challenge your employees to live from no complaints, no excuses, and no regrets. Right here is going to solve a whole lot of problems. In a nutshell, it means teach your employees to be responsible. And again, that's programming and development. Let me just share this with you. It takes at least 21 days to form a habit, at least, sometimes more, because all of us operate from our programmed unconscious, you know, our subconscious mind. After 21 days, if you've tried a new habit, after 21 days of doing it consistently, you've trained your brain to think differently. Otherwise, you're just reacting out of patterns. That negativity, that running to the office, those are programmed patterns. It takes 21 days, so it's not necessarily easy, but you have to do it. So you have to define in your office, what does a complaint look like? And what does an excuse look like? You know, I think in the future, maybe even in March, I'm going to be getting some of these bracelets that say no complaints, no excuses, no regrets. So I would love it if you'd shoot me an email and tell me if that would be something that would be workable or usable in your own office, because it's just a reminder that when we have complaints, excuses, and regrets, we're actually contributing to the negativity and stress and ultimately to the drama and the lower productivity. So challenge your employees to live from no complaints, no excuses, no regrets. Now here's number six, require rejuvenation. Do not fall for the illusion that you're going to get caught up. Understand that it's always about choices and priorities. Even in hectic workplaces, workers can cover for each other. for 5 or 10 minutes, even when it seems like they can't, unless it's just a medical emergency. There's times where we can cover for each other. You can get a little stretch break, you can get some fresh air, drink a glass of water, and you really consciously say, this is my rejuvenation. It may even be a phone call to a friend, not to gripe and vent, but it could be something that rejuvenates you. Grab something to eat, but make it mandatory. In other words, do not reward overwork and overwhelm. Remember what Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz said, every 90 to 120 minutes, the body craves rest and recovery. When we reward people for overworking and staying at their desk, we just create drama. We contribute to the mistakes, so just make it mandatory that people get their breaks. Number 7 is to be the change that you want to see. As I said before, the number one stressor for employees is a boss who uses intimidation tactics to control. The mistake bosses often make is trying too hard to be friends with their employees. However, the line in the sand always appears because as the leader, your loyalty is to the organization. The fracture occurs when you cross the boundary of being their friend. You can and should be friendly, personable, and polite, but you can't keep secrets, give special attention, or exceptions to anyone, or you're going to be perceived as unfair. The number one relationship is the boss-employee relationship, and you have an influence on the energy and communication climate of the entire organization. This is interesting, too. The Gallup found that no single factor more clearly predicts the productivity of an employee than his relationship with his direct supervisor. Your ability to communicate is what effective management is all about. So continue to work on your leadership skills. Make the commitment to developing your staff because no change happens until the attitude and the mindset changes. Now, I want to share something with you that I think you'll be very interested in, but I want to open one more time for questions just to see if there are any.
Yes, Marlene, we do have a new question here. This person says, my managers have been given these tools yet choose not to implement them. As the employee, how do I suggest these concepts be put into action?
You know, that's a tough one, and the best thing I can say is lead them to my website, show them some statistics. My next suggestion is for you to get completely clear as an employee about who you are and just make it a game to see if you can change the client just from your clarity, because here's what I know, and I know this to the bone, and I know it from my own experience. When I was an employee and I had a boss, there was a lot of negativity, and I had a lot of drama with my boss. But I got clear that I was going to see him differently and that I was going to change and I was going to be supportive, and that it changed our relationship because I decided to be positive and change how I saw him. While it didn't change the whole climate, because of my clarity, I no longer had any more personal drama and I didn't engage in people talking bad about him anymore or making him wrong. So what I know is that when we all get clear, we navigate the ship, and what will happen for you as an employee is that you will start attracting a different opportunity, and that field of opportunities and possibilities will open for you to where you will find a more positive work climate, or your boss is going to see something so magical that they're really going to start asking you for advice. That's what I know. I've seen it so many times, so I want to just encourage you as an employee for asking that question, because it tells me you're going to go somewhere. It tells me that you work on yourself, that you develop yourself, because generally employees don't on their own tap into something like that. And that is why I say you have to develop your staff and open that door, because until they see that possibility, it doesn't change. So thank you for that question.
Okay, that's wonderful. And just a comment. Someone mentioned that the no complaints, no excuses, no regrets bracelets sound great.
Oh, fantastic. You do your market research and say, would people wear them, and could we start a movement? I really believe we could. I think we could start
Definitely. A
workplace movement, and it would be so awesome to just be putting on a blog how it's changing things, how it's happening. So I'd love to get everybody involved in that. If you want to do that in March, keep that in mind, and we'll get some ordered.
Definitely email Marlene or comment here if that's of interest to you, because I would think it would be very helpful.
It'd be really fun, too, I think. So,
oh, definitely. I think people could wear them all day, not just at work, but weekends, too.
Absolutely, because, you know, like when I've done that kind of thing for myself, it's just a reminder, and it's that thing I kind of play with it, you know, on my arm. I kind of rub the bracelet, and it reminds me. So it's that training, that subconscious mind through your conscious mind to change a pattern.
Right.
Oops, that was a complaint. Oops, I had a regret. I told someone off. You know, I just spoke at a conference, and it was a medical manager's conference, and the room was so packed that they had to change it to the ballroom, which tells me that everyone experiences drama. We're all a little bit afraid to talk about it. We're all afraid to admit that we have it, you know?
And we all need the reminder to retrain our brains, as you said at the beginning of the message today, that it takes effort to retrain, but it's possible.
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, I know that when we start talking about it and admitting it and working on it and we really put these things into place, we do see change, but a lot of times the managers don't want to do that because they do feel that it takes time and it takes money, but the reality is they just don't know how to structure it.
Right. Very good. So those are all the questions that have come in at the moment.
Okay.
The web.
All right. So I'm going to tell everybody what's coming up. I get asked this question all the time, and we even had some of it here. What can I do to get my employees to quit being so negative, or what can I do to help my employees be more creative and think outside the box? You've heard me answer this question already several times. Here's my answer. Develop them, and here's why. Nothing changes until the thinking changes, and the first time I ever heard that I could create the life I wanted was in college when I heard The Psychology of Winning by Dennis Waitley, and it opened my world. The health of your organization is only as strong as the individual members. The only way to become more developed is by the people you meet, the books you read, and the experiences that you have. And that is why I developed Attitude Builders, and I'm going to tell you about it right now because I think you're going to want to take advantage. It is a staff development system that requires no prep, no plan, and no problem. So I want to paint the picture. Imagine having a monthly meeting where you actually engage your staff and you develop them by introducing them to world-class speakers, authors, and transformational leaders in the field of personal development. Well, that's what I'm offering through Attitude Builders, and here's what you get. You get a monthly teleseminar that's under 1 hour. You get a learning guide. You get a reminder to attend the meeting. You get the copy of the MP3 to download or to keep in your own library. You get the convenience of replaying later for your staff using the same technology that we use today, and a chance to meet and converse with these speakers that you would otherwise have to spend upwards of $300 per person or more for travel. So in a nutshell, this system is built to save you big money and develop your staff without travel, without preparation, without spending thousands and losing days of productivity. So my next program is this Friday, and I'm going to be talking about the 7 keys to self-mastery. Then in October, I have this guest, and his name is William Patterson, and he's a top financial leader who offers an ethical guide to wealth, power, and success. He's an excellent speaker, very motivational. Then I plan on having Sam Glenn, who is known as the authority on attitude. And just yesterday, I spoke with a Yale graduate. It's a woman who's done research on how to set yourself up to become more lucky. And I found her in Oprah magazine, and I was fascinated with her research. So I also have scheduled later on a guest named Steven Siskold, and his book is entitled, What is Your Body Telling You? So as you can see, Attitude Builders is a total wellness program to help you develop yourself and your staff with very little investment in time and money. As of today, there's only 100 days left in 2009. So what if you could totally turn around the drama in your office and start developing your staff to make a real difference? Well, the Attitude Builders program, the package, is going to be $347 for a whole year, and that's starting in October. But since you're on the call today, and until the end of this month, the pre-launch price is $255. That is less than $25 a month for you to have a program that you share with your entire staff with a learning guide. It's going to be under an hour. It's going to save you lots of time and money. But here's the other piece that I think you're going to be totally interested in. You get what I told you about before, those workplace articles. That alone is a $97 value. And so for the first 10 who order today, you're also going to get today's audio and transcript when it's ready. So I'm going to send you an email with this information. Once again, it's only $255. It is going up to $347. It is $255 today on this pre-launch price. I'll send you email with this. You're invited to share this with any of your managers or work associates because once October comes, the price does increase. I want to thank you for your attendance and for your commitment to your own growth. And until we meet again, I wish you a drama-free workplace with no complaints, no excuses, and no regrets.
Thank you so much, Marlene.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Have a wonderful day. Bye.
The moderator.